Okay. Well, hello, everyone. This is Garrett Tufte coming to you on this late hour of October 5th, 2020, or in the early morning hours of October 6th. And I just want to talk a little bit about generally what's going on, where I'm at, where the world's at, all that sort of thing. I've put out a few essays lately, and I've wanted to do some more writing, but it seems like there's so much happening right now that the simplest way to get to it is just to just put it out there, just start talking about it. It's one of those, it's a thing that I really respect in a lot of others as an art form, almost, extended monologues, or what I like to call, what I used to call in a way when I did it more often, extemporaneous verbal essays, which I had attempted in previous ways. I think there was a, what I used to call Tufte's Variations Radio, which was on a small internet radio provider for a little while there. I think that was about, it's probably about 6-7 years ago. Ran with that. Or a similar, the method or the format, so to speak, was basically just me coming on and talking into a mic. Now I don't have quite the studio like that, and there's not a producer over there in the corner, that sort of thing. But I do have a newly refurbished studio of my own, which has been a long time overdue to have something that basically has all of my things in it. So I'm coming to you from a newly refurbished, freshly spiffed up studio space. And it so happens that in the last week, since the last time I put something out, a lot has happened. It's pretty wild. Now, I might just go straight into it. I'll mention that sorts of things that, I'm just going to talk and see where it goes. I hope anyone out there who wants to parse through this or translate what it is that I'm ultimately saying in one manner or the other, as my mind jumps from an original thought to a tangent to another tangent on that tangent that ends up hopefully coming back to the original thesis. But we'll just go from there. I was quite surprised by the October surprise. shocked. Imagine that, right? President got the virus, and was a bit worried there. Something might happen. Not so much that he would actually get hurt from it, but that there would be some complications with the medications. You know, they put a whole list of things. He's taking this, he's taking that, he's taking this, he's taking that, and all these things. And I'm just like, geez, what in the world? I hope they know the interactions between these particular medications. Hope they have a really good pharmacist looking into this, especially for the fact that a lot of these treatments are said to be quite new and may not be fully tested. But it would appear that he came out of it fine. Which he was going to, even if he didn't really do much anyway, it can be uncomfortable for a while. Unless there's some other external issues that can pop in during and with the virus. But and this is going out all across the world on a regular basis. People are talking about it, even with the censorship on all the social medias and the YouTubes and the various other platforms of which we might upload ourselves, our thoughts, videos, is that the CDC recently revised their infection and mortality ratios, and it's basically from anyone getting this thing has less than a 1% chance of dying from it. And it's very close to zero, even above 70, even considering other health complications, especially with younger, and even if you have other health complications, in the aggregate, statistically, you're going to be fine. It's like a 99.997 percent survival rate, which is great. This is really good news. This is awesome. Like, it's the sort of thing that it's just like, oh, this is great news. Great, great, great. Why isn't everyone celebrating? this is what I find strange. Of course, then again, in a lot of ways, I've been kind of laying low. The zeitgeist of the real world is, as opposed to the online world and the various real folks, but the trolls and also the bots and also the skewing and the censorship and the blacklisting and all this, all these sorts of things that have been building up over these years that have found their culmination or climax of sorts in this, what appear to be tribulations, global tribulations at that. Nonetheless, still perpetuate forth, but in the meanwhile, people are still talking about these facts, and it's good news. This is great. So, and again, this is the sort of thing that some, you know, conscientious folks, doctors, scientists, who are really looking at the data and are actually concerned with truth and actually concerned with health, that you look at this and it's like, this is not a problem. At worst, it's like a seasonal flu. But really, it's a bad cold. Everybody will get through it. When you get through it, your immune system's going to be stronger anyway. That's one of the beautiful things about the human body, is that we have these systems within us that take care of these viruses, bacteria, that sort of thing. Now, bacteria can be much worse than these viruses, and we have antibiotics for that, and of course there's some issues that have come up from excessive usage of antibiotics, also antibiotics in for livestock, the food we eat, and for those being ubiquitously passed around and then flooding our environment as much as they do, can actually cause the bacteria to gain resistance to these antibiotics, such that we'd have to invent some other ones in order to actually take down the bacteria. But all that really means, for me to say all that, is that we just need to be smart in our application of medicine, really. There's an important distinction when it comes to things that we ingest and things that we do, that there are some that is dietary. There are some things we do that are dietary, that are routine on a regular basis. So every day, where the word comes from ultimately is, well, I mean, the absolute etymology of the word, I'm not perfectly certain on, but obviously it refers to the food we eat each day. So we have that, something you do every day, that's a diet, it's, you know, bing, bing, bing. And then there's the medicinal, something you do, but it's not every day, it's not all the time. You know, we're not taking, well, hopefully we're not taking antibiotics every single day of our life, and hopefully we're not taking these, you know, various pharmaceutical medicines of a questionable veracity every day, because if you are, then there's other issues, you know. And so much of our medical system for so long is and this has been talked about, and this is one of the side effects, silver linings behind this, and there are many too, behind this whole pandemic and the whole lockdown scenarios and the everything you know, is part of that which is beneficial for us, this silver lining, is that we can really have a reckoning with the medical system that we've had, certainly in this country, and likely in other ones too. When our medicines for so long have just been treatments and actual cures are ignored or vilified or in some cases outright banned, you know. It's a strange thing to see that happen, but at that, it would appear that this has been going on for some while. There's been a there was a medical takeover that began over 100 years ago, right around the turn of the century, that also coincided as well with compulsory state mandated education. And basically, these are various aspects and various ways. Here are two very strong and very evident manners of which potentially allow malicious actors to gain control of the basic functions of humanity. If not silly functions, in the case of functions isn't the word, but the modus operandi, the way that we work, what we do, how we think, our emotions, love, fear, various others, various combinations. But these are two realms of which we've been attacked, like as a people, for the last 100+ years. And going back to that, it seems that so much of what we dealt with in the 20th century is still perpetuated onward. In the time since, let's just take education. In the last 120 years since compulsory state education, where again, think about this, everyone in their own lives has gone to public school, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for 13 years of your life. 13 years. Maybe 10. If you drop out early. That period of time where you are basically held against your will in a state mandated, you know, in some cases, it's prison for kids. It really is. I realized that when I was about 12 years old, right around there. The age of reason, that was one of my times that everybody has their times in their life where they have revelations about how the world operates. What's really going on behind the scenes. What it's really done to you. You know, and at that age, there were a lot for me. There's multiple things, one after the other. There's some religion, there's some of the education, there's obviously getting into like puberty, various other things. And that is, you know, at the time I realized that about the education system. It was like, this place is this is a prison. And I noticed so many of my friends, especially, you know, I didn't necessarily want to go there. Once I realized that, it was like, this isn't how people naturally operate. Part of that was from reading about evolution as well. And it was like, oh, look at this. You know, 50,000 years ago, people were running around, so they say, running around in tribes, and hunter-gatherers going around the forest and, you know, living up in that way, growing and perpetuating each other on, telling stories and that sort of thing. It's a relatively astoundingly recent development in not only the human species, but also in civilization, for there to be compulsory education, to have our children thrown into these big boxes that are surrounded with fences, sometimes with barbed wire on them, and where you're forced into a room, and then you're told, this is what's going on, this is what you're going to learn, this is what you're going to do. Like, I can understand the fact how useful it is for teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, and then other basic life skills. And I mean, this was the original point, one of the original points I've come back to, is that in the span of 100 years plus of having compulsory education, we have gone from what they called at least a mostly illiterate populace. I mean, how many people could read back then? That's what the clergy originally was. You know, the clerks, those are the people who actually read and write. You know, and they were rare for, you know, most of civilization. Most people just, they didn't do that. They didn't bother with it. They didn't bother with reading. They didn't bother with writing. It just wasn't their thing. They weren't taught how to do it. And, you know, it can be tough to pick up on. A compulsory education, at least on that level, is quite impressive at introducing the concept and introducing writing, reading, arithmetic to folks. And knowing that is astoundingly empowering. It really is. But it also has a flip side to it. So, with compulsory education, or that is to say, with the pretty much the totality of the population being able to read and write, and well, not all of them being able to do math, and at that, it's not necessarily like, I don't know, you'd have to look at the statistics. Okay, well, how many people are capable of this grade level of reading? How many of this a grade level of writing or whatever, but for the most part, you know, if someone stands up in front of you and starts talking about something or gives you a flyer, you can understand it. Or you give it to someone, if they actually read the thing, they can understand what's being said. It's just it's a additional level of communication. Now, having such a thing gives us, it's quite empowering, but it also allows us to be swindled. Because, I mean, writing itself and reading what's written can be both empowering, it can be beneficial, it can be wisdom, but it can also be lies. You know, as I was going through and cleaning up this studio, I made a bookshelf and I was putting up books, and I went through a number of them. And also, I'd like to encourage anyone out there to read my essays, recent essays, on the website. Starting with, I would say, A Short Chronicle of the Last Year. Go with that and then go more recent from there. And there's one of them, Reckoning with a Liberal Education, where I looked at the writings of some, I would say, reprehensible writers who were nonetheless, or artists, who were nonetheless still revered for whatever reason, or they have some sort of large following. Which I still don't understand to this day. I didn't get it then. But actually, I didn't get it then for years. I didn't get it. But now I get it. And actually, just recently, you know, I said there's this revelatory period, and I was 12. Well, I've had a similar revelatory period just in the last few months, that is in the midst of this whole virus panic madness and everything else. And part of that revelation is realizing that the written word and the stories that are given by whatever author across any, you know, could be any place, any time, any people, any person, man, woman, etc. There can be wisdom in those words, but there can also be lies. And I realized that some of what I'd been reading and what I'd been, what had been indicated to me to be these works of high art form are anything but. In fact, they are quite reprehensible, demoralizing, ridiculing, insulting, and generally a massive drain on the human spirit. And the fact they get promoted in the way they do speaks to a kind of spiritual type of attack that that we've all been under. Because it isn't just the person reading it that that gets affected by this, but it's the people promoting it, and it's the people who interact with the people who promote it. And if you know that it's reprehensible, then you can have a little bit more of a, let's say, develop a bit more of an immunity to it. But even then, just taking it in still affects you. Similar to the manner of subliminal advertising. You know, you watch an advertisement on TV, and you're like, oh yeah, it's just another ad. So what? But it really does affect you. Really does take it in, otherwise they wouldn't make the things, especially when this is something that that speaks to a larger, greater awakening for us as well, is to look around and be like, okay, who likes to actually listen to these advertisements? Who actually likes to watch these advertisements? Anybody? Does anybody like them? I mean, the people who make them, maybe. Or if it's something that is actually practically useful in your life, maybe. I mean there are advertisements that I've watched before that I'm like, oh yeah, that's great, maybe I'll get that thing, you know. Or that's an awesome service, maybe I'll give them a call now. Like, that does exist. But there's another subset of advertisements that is it is there for demoralization purposes. It is there in order to, like, quite literally make you afraid, make you weak, and demoralize you. And the pharmaceutical company has this, pharmaceutical companies, the big ones, have had this down in spades, you know, for ages. They are the top of the bell when it comes to subversive advertisements. But anyway, so being able to read and write and all that, give me a double-edged sword on that front, because the lies, they're written down in a book, whether they're lies, whether they're instructions for horrific thing, terrible ways to act, you know, promoting terrible behavior, that sort of deal. This is not necessarily all that helpful to folks. And really, not at all. It just isn't, you know. There's a, when we've witnessed that, you go back to like the 60s, and you say that, oh, okay, well, that's the counterculture, right? The counterculture took over then. There was a reaction, a rebuff, or a pushback against the prevailing culture of the 50s and early 60s in the United States. And you look at that and be like, okay, well, I can understand that when you have a solid hegemonic culture and there are mores, there are things that people follow. Like let's just take for example the idea of just sexual intercourse only during marriage. You know, to some people that seems perfectly fine. If you're raised up in that sort of environment and the culture that's how things work, and you don't question it, and you don't feel a need to do otherwise, then it's just like, oh, okay, that's fine, no big deal. But there are certain free spirits who nonetheless find something like that personally, individually repressive toward the expression of their liberty, their freedom to act and to do what they want to do, which is understandable. Now, how far does that go? Let's just take this one example. And be like, okay, well, there's a pushback against that sort of imposition. And the want for personal freedom outweighs it. And some people go out there and they start doing that. Start, like, say, having sex without wedlock, outside of wedlock. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, this is fine. There's nothing wrong with this. Doesn't make you a horrible person. It's not the end of the world. You know? And I can confirm, too. For me. You know? Now, this is not the sort of... This isn't the culture war that we're fighting right now on that front. But I can confirm that by itself, it's not a horrible thing. So long as you and your partner communicate and are aware of expectations, you know, what you're about, what your intentions are, what theirs are, and how you feel about each other, that sort of thing, as long as you communicate that, you can have many different partners in your life and enjoy your life quite well and treat people well all the while doing it. Now, if you just go that far, then okay, yeah, no big deal. But then it goes a little further. You know, there's a slippery slope toward that. Oh, okay, there's personal freedom. All right. Personal freedom, personal freedom. Okay, great, great, great. All right. And then it gets to, at some point, you know, if you don't stop yourself at some point, you can, you know, there are certain, like I wrote in a recent piece, there are certain aspects of humanity that are not to be abused ever. And the pushback of personal liberty on that front, on fronts of that sort of nature, so to speak, can go too far. And so it is necessary for the swing back. You know, this is the... there's a cultural swing back, at least here in the States, how this works. And this is one of the aspects of American political life and cultural life, social life, that is what appears to me quite genius, and it appears to have emerged organically in the last 50 years. It's not like it's written down in law that... okay, we're going to move this way culturally, and then we'll find a firm footing, and then we'll hold that firm footing across the society for so many years or a couple decades, and then we'll swing this way, and that sort of thing. It's not planned. People just sort of they react and push and swing one way or the other, both as individuals and as groups. And this can be a good thing, but there's danger in that. Because right now we're trying to be pushed even further, pushed too far, so to speak. Like the pendulum, they're trying to push the pendulum like way off the clock, you know. It's just like it wants to swing back. There's a gravity there that is necessary and important for our collective benefit. Because ultimately the best societies and civilizations are the ones that muddle through these sorts of things, that don't have this hard, rigid, set-in-stone dogma by which people operate. You have that sort of thing, it becomes brittle, and then it shatters. You know, in our case, we have much more malleable. We have some leeway, some motion to push here in this direction or that direction, take some of us with it. Some of us go the other way, some of us stay in one position, some run straight ahead, some take off to the left, right, the other. And that is absolutely vital. Now, the cultural swings are they're an effect of having individual liberties protected by law. Now, this is something that that the federal government, it's right there. This is like rule number one for them, is to protect their God-given rights, which are a certain number of them are enumerated in the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. And that is absolutely paramount. As an individual, doesn't matter whether you're man, woman, in some cases child, black, white, any, doesn't matter, your color, your age, whatever, your individual rights, individual personal sovereignty is paramount and is protected by law. And this is the beauty of America. It really is. And it's the beauty of any country or any people who see the truth in that and the benefit in that. Because it really is the worst oppression and the worst tyranny is not done by some individual person. It's not done by one guy who rampages around. It's done by hierarchies, of which government itself, you know, to control the mind, government, is the, the culmination, the absolute of this hierarchy that says, okay, you must do this, you must do this, you must do this. You have this person at the top who's the authority, sends out all the rules and orders to those below them. Those below them send out all their orders to those below them, and on and on and on, down the line, until everybody is affected. And what happens in these sort of systems is they, if you don't have a check on that, like we do, with the creation of our government, our federal government, in 1787, that said very specifically that the purpose of this government is to protect those individual liberties from the government itself. It is righteous, it is brilliant, and it is absolutely vital for the health of a society and the perpetuation of a civil society. Because otherwise, you get totalitarianism. It happens. We're watching it happen right now, globally, worldwide. This attempted takeover, this medical martial law, that is trying to be, it's tempting to be imposed upon the people of the world. of which China appears to be the beta test for the thing, where, I mean, at the same time, like, I don't really know ultimately what's going on there, and I don't think anybody at the ground level here in the States or otherwise in the Western world really understand just what it is like to live there as a citizen, as an individual. I mean, I've searched for information. I can't seem to find it. Just like, oh, can I, is it possible to find out where is a Chinese person who just be like, somebody doesn't need to be in any sort of special place. What's your day-to-day life like? Like, what's their day-to-day life like over there? And maybe if we heard that, we could have some, you know, better understanding and better relations with the people over there. Because right now, we're just, right now the world is hitting heads, butting heads like a couple of rams. Based on ideology, and ultimately what we need is real communication to find out, okay, how are you living? What's that like? Oh, what did they do to you there? Oh, that's interesting. Well, what's your day-to-day? You know, that sort of deal. That way we could actually, you know, find some things in common between us, and also try to understand the differences, what works and what doesn't. This is also very important. Okay, what works, what doesn't, right? How do we figure that out? Well, you got to talk. You got to communicate. We have to express these sorts of things. And we actually have to, open and free communication. That's why First Amendment, right there, freedom of speech, absolutely paramount. Freedom of the press, absolutely paramount. You know, these, you start getting rid of that, and we're talking 1984 stuff here. We are talking A Brave New World. We're talking, you know, all the dystopian science fiction nightmares that presumably these authors came up with just because. I mean, it's just imagination runs wild. And there we go. Let's see, what could that be like? Oh, that's pretty wild. Oh, what if you extended that sort of idea into the future? Oh, well, then this would happen, and there'd be those people over there, and who knows what would that, this way. And, it's kind of like, you know, as they say, 1984 wasn't supposed to be an instruction manual. And at that, I feel a special connection to this, because I was born in 1984, and on August 13th, and, no, I got a couple of bad numbers there, supposedly bad numbers in the on the birth dates. Or you could say, I guess, auspicious, if that's the right word. Even though at the same time I've kind of owned up to the number 13. That's my number. I really like it. So sorry, Stephen King. I know that scares you. but hey, I was born on the 13th, so I got to go with it. You know, you run with the, you play the hand you're dealt, really. And so there's that. But the 1984 thing, you know, we're seeing a lot of ways a culmination of that. It's attempted sort of takeover, because it's not going to work. It's not. And the folks that are still perpetuating this sort of thing, like, I mean, it didn't take much longer than after the first lockdown came in, and again, I feel like if you've read the Chronicle of the last year, you can see that I really feel like I got some part to play in this, and I take it really personal too. That at the age of 35, I was finally going to the city that I wanted to go to. Bringing some economic propositions that I thought were pretty important, and also all of my other talents and skills. And I'm going to try to make it there. And literally, the day I get there, the president announces a lockdown. It just, I mean, the connections here are just ridiculous. Absolutely nuts, you know. And it only took me a month after that to start to, you know, piece things together. Because at first, you know, I thought it was, oh, shit, this is a thing. Oh, my God, what? You know, look at those videos out of China. What? What's going on? People are dying. Oh, no. And we take their advice. Okay, this is how you stop the virus, is you house arrest your entire population and force them to wear masks or something like that. And then they did that. And within a month, they said, oh, that's it. Nobody has the virus anymore. Okay, well, they go back to work, and the rest of us are just here 6 months later, 7 months later. That was pretty much seven months later. We're still, like, there's this, ooh, sometimes lockdown, but sometimes not. And you can have 25% people in your restaurant, but you have to wear a mask, but you don't have to. But at the same time, you also have to keep your distance from it. Oh, and you can't have parties. And you can only be with... Like, what the... Who... How dare they... How dare anybody mandate that upon anyone? This is absurd. It's absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts that anyone would make this... ever want to do this sort of thing. It's awful. It is disgusting. You know, and it speaks to a culture of abuse that has been built up for some while, and that some people and even more systems have been sort of structured in a way that they could push this forward and somehow make people do it. But the thing is, none of this will hold up in court. At all. None of it. Not a one thing. Not a one. Not mask wearing, not limits on public gatherings, not shutting down businesses, especially small businesses, the attacks on the middle class. It's terrible. Just awful. Attacks on entrepreneurs, attacks on small businesses. What? How dare they? That will not hold up in court at all. I mean, you could get the lawyer fresh out of law school, you know, working on his first case. He'll win that in a second. Like, this is, this isn't rocket surgery here, you know. and at that, if you're actually concerned about there being a virus, well, stay home. If you're worried about catching it, you can stay home. You see, that's the wonder of having personal sovereignty and freedom of choice in America. Like, this is what makes us awesome, and we are that if we're anything, you know. And that's why everyone has wanted to come here. That's why we've been the, you know, for years upon years, the envy of the world for this. And there's no reason for us to not be that anymore. Unless we do it to ourselves. Unless we just commit, you know, civil and cultural suicide. Which is what's being attempted by a lot of people here. And I don't know where their loyalties lie at all. Where is it? Where's their loyalty? Who are these people who are putting this, imposing this upon us? And in some ways I wonder if